like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for another week. I apologise on behalf of both myself, Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear, Molly, for not being here last week to get you guys all through, guys and gals, all through round two, which is obviously one of the most important weeks of the year. But nevertheless, we are back this week, Molly, and we've missed out on a whole entire week of positive Hawk talk, so we're going to be ripping right into it this evening, I'm sure.
Yes, hi everyone, sorry about that. These things happen, but I think everyone probably had a much better week for not having us around.
That's right. I think DT Talk had similar problems a week or two ago. Apparently, the internet's not finished, Molly, no. And we're still building it, so no, there are still bugs.
I tried to download it, but it just stopped halfway through.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's what we need. We need the NBN so every single one of us can download the entire internet all the time. That's pretty much how it works.
I blame Tony.
Yes, or I blame the government or something. Wasn't that what Clark and Dawes said? I blame the government. Anyway, let's get on to actual football matters, of which there were many. It's been a really good season, despite all the off-season stuff, Molly. I've been really enjoying the games just as pure football entertainment. Certainly Friday night was like that. That was just a drama that you wouldn't be able to script if you were, I don't know, Steven Soderbergh or, you know, someone who was actually a really good scriptwriter, who I'm blanking on right now. Who do we have who's a good scriptwriter? Do you tell me.
Oh, I don't know, Spielberg or someone. Ooh. Directed.
Oh, how about the guy, about Zack Snyder or who's the guy who did...
J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams, yeah, very good. I did see the Superman trailer that was today. That was pretty good. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, we're getting way away from football yet again. And we're only 2 minutes into the show. Right, so let's get into the round review before we talk about any other... Well, no, let's not. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping first. Now, of course, we didn't have shows last week because I was in Phillip Island and there were technical difficulties with doing a show from my laptop, and that was entirely my fault, and I apologise. And I have a bit of bad news to report, Molly. Unfortunately, Dan is not going to be continuing on the selection committee. He's been deselected or unselected or whatever the word is. He is withdrawn for personal reasons to spend time with his family. So he is not going to be permanently on the selection committee. I think he'll come back for a few shows here and there. But just for next week, this is not going to be a permanent thing because it'll kill me, but I am getting Footy Lover 18 to come on tomorrow night. Thursday, I think it's 7:30 is when the show starts. So stay tuned for that one because shows nice. With Footy Lover 18 are always incendiary, of course.
They are. Now, the real Dr. Dream Team.
That's right. Oh, poor Dr. Dream Team. He's had a shocker of a year.
He's disappeared, has
he? Well, apparently there has been some conjecture that he was actually... Now, who was it? Was it Cal Toomey from the AFL? Or someone
I saw something along those lines.
Yes. There were accusations that he was the real Dr. Dream Team, but he's overseas now and it's been taken over by someone who I think after the first week he was in the bottom, or he was outside the top 100,000. Poor guy. Oh, well, poor doctor. Perhaps we'll get him on later on to explain himself later on in the year. But anyway... yes, we've wasted a full 4 minutes, Molly, before getting to the first game of the round, which, of course, the Fremantle and Essendon game on the Friday night. Now, there are actually a fair amount of important Fremantle players to talk about. There's a couple of bad news stories to start with, and they would be Matthew Pavlich and Nick Subin. Pavlich obviously being fully priced going into the season, and it's come out, well, I suppose... Those of his owners, of whom I am one in Supercoach, probably should have done a bit more research into his interrupted pre-season. He's coming off off-season surgery, and it has affected his game. That doesn't always pertain in terms of match performance. Some players do start like a train anyway, despite having off-season surgery. Pavlich is not one of those. He's looked like he's been hampered. So for those of us who do have him in either Dream Team or Supercoach, Molly, is it do we just ride it out because he's going to be a premium anyway, and there are more, there are usually problems elsewhere in the side to look at first, or is he a priority to get out of your side?
Well, I mean, there's two different answers now. In Supercoach, you probably would just hold him, and he's a long way under his implied price at the moment. And that's after it drops. So, you know, he's got 162 break even. He's going to lose some, but could turn it around any week now when he gets a bit of form under his belt. And the fact that it's starting to hit the press of his problems is sometimes going to see him be his teammates try and help him out a bit. But in Dream Team, I mean, unless you've got other problems elsewhere, you're facing donuts or you want to take advantage of rookies you don't have, there's absolutely no reason not to get rid of him with two trades a week. So Dream Team, I'd say, is a sell, and a super coach a hold.
All right. Nick Subin, as I mentioned there before, so he might have been someone who people got onto, especially after the first week when he scored 97 in Dream Team and 120 in Supercoach. His scores in both competitions have gone down each of the two subsequent weeks. Even against the Dogs, he was a poor fantasy scorer. He probably played more of a back pocket role that we're used to playing, seeing him in at Fremantle. And in the Dons game, there were a lot of Dockers who underperformed on the night, and he scored less than 50 in both competitions. Again, now you look at his, he actually made some money due to him being so underpriced. He's priced at 57, even after having an increase in price of over 20,000 in both competitions. He's priced at late 50s, he's actually 60 in Supercoach, but his average, even after the poor numbers on the weekend, is over 70 in both competitions. But the trend is certainly down. How much faith would you have in Subin if you got him in after round one? You've made some money. Is it time to get back out again?
Again, I mean, well, actually, no. In both competitions, you would be trying to get rid of him, depending on where you had issues with other players. If you had didn't have to take care of someone else, he may be a good option to cash out down to a rookie you may need to pick up. Now, in the back line, I think there's a guy we're going to talk about in a minute who is an option as a rookie to bring in, who hasn't had a price rise, which means you'll be able to cash in a whole lot of money that you can use elsewhere, maybe to upgrade someone in another area.
Yep, so I'm looking here also in the Fremantle backline, in the fantasy backline, and Daniel Pearce is listed as a back in both competitions, as, of course, Subin is. Pearce listed at 396 in Dream Team, so his implied price is 78 in that competition. So you're paying a bit extra to go up from Subin, but you look at Daniel Pearce's scores. We talked about him after the first week, about how opposition coaches look at him and Stephen Hill and wonder, who do we tag? Well, the answer is they tag Hill. It does seem like that way. And Pearce does get it lost a bit in the mix, but that's actually good for his scoring. He tends to score a lot less flashily than he did at Port, because there is probably more stars around him in that midfield. But you look at his numbers. So you're paying an extra 100, about 100 in Dream Team, 108 that is, and an extra 160 in Supercoach. Nevertheless, even though you are putting some money in, you're probably going to get a much better bang for your buck out of Pearce, unless you think that it might be Pearce that eventually starts getting tagged rather than Hill. I mean, people have criticised Hill for being a one-trick pony. I mean, that's a very good trick he's got, as I've said before. But, I mean, do you think opposition coaches are going to start thinking that that Daniel Pearce is the one to tag rather than Hill?
I think there will be teams that will mix and match between the two of them, maybe even try and play defensive on both of them, and let someone like Duffield get away. But yeah, I think he'll have pretty much a freer range than what he has in the past. But I'm not sure he's still, I mean, for people who have already picked him up, then Dream Team is a definite hold. Supercoach is a bit different. He's got a very high break even, and I wouldn't be urgently trying to get rid of him. But if no other trades are needed at this point, you may consider cashing him in. But yeah, I think in Dream Team, in both competitions, he'd be fine for a hold. Yeah, I think he'll score 70 to 90, you know, most weeks.
Now, the final Freo player I've got noted down is Michael Walters. I've always liked him as a pure AFL player. As a fantasy player, I've never really considered him, but you look at those scores from the first three rounds, I mean, again, Ballantyne hasn't been there for one of them, I think, but those numbers on the weekend, particularly 96 and 111, it tells me that he's in a hot vein of form, and he obviously has the potential to score like that every week, but I don't think that sort of player... I mean, I'm not sure he's the new Brent Harvey, Molly. I think you pretty much have to be Brent Harvey to be a true fantasy premium scoring option who won't let you down with a 20 or 30 here and there. I'm not sure Walters is quite at that level yet, so I wouldn't be going there. I'd love to have him in my team because I'd love to watch him play and think that he's playing for me, but I'm not sure we can trust him for Dream Team or Supercoach yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, looking at the selections, not many people have him, so the question's really more around, is he a worthy pickup? And I don't think he is at this point. I think you've probably missed the boat to a degree.
He's pretty highly priced as well, I suppose.
So, I mean, I think there could be an argument if you had picked him up before the price rises, but even with the little amount that he's gone up now, I don't think he's really worth it. I don't think he's going to get to the top, you know, 15 or so players. So it would be an enormous risk to pick him up now. I don't think he's moving into that midfield. I think the midfield's pretty set.
And we're back. We are back on the second part of the show. This is Thursday we're talking to you now. The first part of the show was Wednesday, and we were cut off in the middle by the internet, and internet, we shake our collective fists at you, don't we, Molly?
I just did.
Yes.
I literally just did.
That makes for great radio, great podcasting. Anyway, let us get right into the Essendon side, because we have done now the Fremantle side. That was what we did before we were rudely interrupted, and let us rudely get on to the Essendon players. There are going to be many, many jokes, although... And it is Thursday now, Molly, and now that the Melbourne Football Club has been embroiled, it was a farce before, but now it's just a tragedy. This whole tanking. I don't know. It's just sad. Anyway, the fantasy question here from the Essendon side of that Friday night game, Molly, is Patrick Ryder. Can you afford to actually keep him on your bench? This is probably more of a Supercoach question because presumably if you've got him in Dream Team, then you have two trades per week, you're going to be burning that trade to get him out anyway. And the obvious trade in, of course, is Leuenberger. But if you're conserving trades in Supercoach, can you get away with 3 weeks of people like Blickavs, Dorr, who's obviously been named this week, or Rowe? Or is that too much?
No, I mean, I think if you are trying to conserve trades, then that's okay. I mean... those guys are probably, you're going to lose about 50 points a week. So it's probably about 150 points, let's say, that you're going to lose. So I think you'd really be hoping to get a little bit more than 150 out of each trade. So it is conceivable that you would go without trading him out and riding the points. Now... I guess the other issue is that you're not getting any price rises or anything, or not that you'd do that out of the ruck area anyway. So, you know, there is an opportunity there to go to Leuenberger and use that cash elsewhere if you haven't got other holes in your side.
I mean, I have him in Supercoach and Dream Team, and obviously he's... I mean, but the problem was I went into this week with a huge amount of cash, and when I go, and I've also got Pavlich in Supercoach, so I'm going rider down to Leuenberger and Pavlich to someone like Westhoff, who's about the same price as Pavlich, and all of a sudden I find myself with $850,000 in my kitty. It's just too much. I feel like I should be upgrading elsewhere because rider to Leuenberger makes you such a large amount of cash that if you had cash going into the week, then you feel like you're wasting points on wasting cash on the sidelines when you could be making points with it.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I mean, I guess you fall into the problem of only having two trades. So, you know, those are two pretty good trades, assuming that you think Westhoff is going to continue on his merry way, which, you know, he probably is, so, or maybe not as high on his way, but, you know, the prospects of him averaging 90 to 100 for the rest of the season are pretty darn good.
We'll get to him later, believe me, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, if you think that's going to happen, then, yeah, you should be bringing him in this week. And, you know, if you think Leuenberger is going to be a better option than Ryder, especially with Ryder missing weeks, then, yeah, you should be bringing in Leuenberger this week. So, you know, having 800,000, okay, you would rather make a third and possibly a fourth trade, but that's okay. You can do that next week when, you know, you don't have these concerns. Perhaps you'll have other concerns. It's also another week for those rookies, you know, maybe to make you another 5K, 10K. And if they're on your bench, then, you know, you can make that trade next week and use the money then.
All right, and just to round out on the Essendon talk, Nick Comer, I presume most of his owners will be trading him out this week for Crouch, or maybe they might even be going to a Maze, or maybe even one of the dog rookies we'll talk about later who got named this week. Is that the right move? Or, I mean, I suppose it does depend on the team, but could you see a scenario where you might ignore Comer and go and fix problems elsewhere?
Well, I mean, the good thing about Comer is he's not going to lose you any money this week.
Hmm.
So if you've got guys in the team where you're going to lose value and you'd like to take care of them first, then that's absolutely an option to do that first. Knowing that he's going to probably come back and get his side and he's still got a negative break even. So, you know, especially in Dream Team, if you make your two trades this week and Comer's still on your bench, that's okay, leave him there. And then next week, if you have another two issues, then the third week he comes back and you ride along with him for another week or two. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's not wrong to trade him and it's not wrong to hold him.
All right. On the North Melbourne and Sydney game, Andrew Swallow, I feel like we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, Molly, after his first game, but his numbers in that Sydney game and his numbers for the first 3 weeks have been, you know, almost as good as anyone. And they've been pretty good opponents that he's been playing. But I feel like, and it was especially the case in the Sydney game, that they let Andrew Swallow get his numbers, but what they concentrated on was manning up the players he was disposing it to, and thus he got a lot of Dream Team numbers, but his Supercoach score was pretty down because his disposal efficiency, well, I think, was hovering around the 30s most of the game. So, Sydney have obviously figured the way to beat North is to shut down their outside game, and so they don't worry. They don't spend a lot of time, as much time necessarily, on a player like Swallow, who is their one man engine room. So he'll get numbers. If this is the template for beating North, then other teams presumably will emulate it. Then that means Swallow is going to get numbers like Dane Swan. I mean, or like Chris Judd used to. So I mean, they're treating Swallow essentially as though that sort of attacking player who they don't mind getting the ball, because all they're worried about is the people who he feeds it to and trying to stop them. So, I mean, I've seen some coaches say no, he'll revert back to 105, but you know, there is a case to be made that if the coaches, the opposition analysts looking at North, see the Swan template or the blueprint for beating that side, they might emulate it, and that means Swallow might average 120 this year.
Yeah, no, that's an absolute possibility, and he's come off three good games against three good sides. So, you know, coming up against the lesser sides, there's every chance he's going to average what he is averaging now. Now, if you pick him up, you're backing him in to average that for the rest of the year because he's at about 110, 115 implied price. So it's not going to matter if you get him in this week or not. I think his price is going to hover around where he is now for the rest of the season. So it's just a matter of if you think the points are what you need in the coming weeks.
I guess he's one you probably can't wait until after the bye to look at. Are you probably looking at bye issues with some of these players? I don't even know what bye. Look, I haven't even looked at the bye situation, to be honest. But, yeah, there's not that much upside. I mean, 17 upside in Dream Team and actually zero in Supercoach due to that relatively poor game on the weekend, less than 100. So maybe more of a Dream Team play than a Supercoach play. But also at the Kangaroos, since we have last spoken, of course, we didn't have a show last week, Molly. Aaron Mullett got a Rising Star nomination. That was after round two. And went on with it this week again with another 98 in Dream Team and 94 in Supercoach. He is a valid mid-price improver. And, I mean, looking at his... He's obviously a centre in all competitions, but he's priced at 61 in Dream Team and averaging 96, and he's priced at 68 in Supercoach and averaging 106. So it's not too late to get on the Mullett bandwagon. Are you on it?
No, I'm not. Now, he's a centre, so I'm pretty set for my centres as far as rookies and mids in both competitions. I'm really at the point where I need to start thinking about upgrades, so...
I wonder if someone, if you have someone like Kane Lucas, it's not, I mean, it might not be too late, especially if you're going someone down to Leuenberger, it might actually be worth going Lucas up to Mullett, because I know Lucas has got a pretty low break even, but Mullett's a better scorer and you might actually get more points out of that trade.
Yeah, no, there's some truth in that. I mean, and thinking about it, you know, having said that, I did do a sort of a down trade of Tumpus to Crouch, so that's the trade this week that I had, not wanting to miss out on Crouch's price rises. But, you know, there is a theory that you would be better off taking Aaron Mullett for the score and the price rises. So, you know, I think that's something that, that needs to be considered.
That's an interesting one. I mean, I don't know how much money you'd have to do a rider to Leuenberger and Tumpus to Mullett trade, but yeah, it wouldn't actually be that much different, I would have thought. So, interesting. All right, on the Sydney side, I've got Jared McVeigh down here on the running sheet, but he's pretty much a proxy for all the Sydney midfielders. Myself and Ben from Fantasy Football Club, who helped me out on Saturday, we're sitting there trying watching the Sydney-North Melbourne game, trying to figure out what McVeigh's role was. And it seemed like Bastanac was supposedly his opponent, but he didn't go near him for most of the game. And that seemed to be a bit of a template for the way the rest of Sydney players played. Especially in that second half, it was just a shootout, and it was all the bullets were all going the one way, unfortunately, and the North midfielders were showing up a bit for work rate. So I feel like if you've got McVeigh now, I mean, there has been a bit of hype around he might have six or seven Brownlow votes at this stage, but I seem to remember at this stage last year, people were saying that about another Sydney midfielder, and he sort of dropped away, and I expect the Sydney midfield to drop away in fantasy terms, just the same as Josh P. Kennedy did about a month after this last season was when he started to fall away. But I wouldn't expect these sort of numbers out of Sydney every week, Molly.
No, they're one of those teams that really mixes up their midfield a lot and runs them through different roles, different tagging roles, different forward roles, different back roles. So I think that's a fair call to say that, you know, these guys are going to be up and down in their scoring, and they don't tend to have a superstar who racks up big Dream Team or Super Coach numbers like a Collingwood or the likes. They do share it around a lot more and have different roles. So not good value in these guys, I wouldn't have thought.
All right. On the Melbourne West Coast game, Dean Turlick, one of the big questions this week is whether Turlick is worth downgrading, say, a Luke Brown or a Lachlan Plowman to. Is he someone? I mean, I know you don't want to miss out on Crouch. Do you not want to miss out on Turlick either?
With the Browns bad game, yeah, I'm probably going to make that move myself. To just set up that little bit extra cash and give me another week to look at the other guys in the back line and hopefully they can put up enough to move them towards premium type trades next week.
Mm. Well, personally, I'd be going Plowman down. I mean, I've still got some faith in Brown. And having said that, I mean, Melbourne are playing GWS this week, so Plowman could bounce back. But I mean, if he makes the cut from the extended bench that he's on, but yes, assuming that is the case, then I have faith in those two that they. I mean, they have shown that they can score, but it's just a matter of whether they'll actually get a game in which they do score. So that the showdown last week was a game in which not really any of the four small defenders, I should say, scored well. Obviously, the Port players didn't, like your Pittards and Stevensons didn't score well either. Also on the West Coast side of that game, Molly, Dean Cox. I feel like, I was actually told by someone that most of Fantasy Football Club actually had Dean Cox as captain because they were made use of the captain loophole, of course, in West Coast. Because, of course, Cox played on the Saturday and they were able to play that game, assuming that if he hadn't fired, they had someone like a Swan or someone... to be the captain on the Sunday as well. So is that something that you've been doing, Molly, is the captaincy loophole, or is that something that you're sort of leaving to the hardcore? Do you think, especially in Supercoach, that that's something you have to do every week just to make sure you get the most out of your captain?
Well, I think if you're deadly serious, then yes, you do. But... You know, you'd have to be pretty deadly serious to be doing that in Supercoach. It is a good move. I've done it in Dream Team in the past and to a lesser degree Supercoach. But yeah, I'm not looking to do it as much this year with the fact that you can do it week in, week out. I don't think it's that worth it myself.
Also at the Eagles, Mark Lacroix, he's on the bubble this week, of course, because he missed only the one round after it looked like he'd broken his arm. Obviously, he hadn't broken his arm because he was back and scored another 80-odd in Dream Team. In his two games, it's been 82 and 81 in Dream Team and 91 and 84 in Supercoach. Now, of course, he was injured, I think it was late in the third or early in the fourth in that first game against Fremantle, so he was on track for a ton. Nevertheless, his break even is in the 40s in both competitions. I suppose we can wait maybe a week to see if he's going to be scoring. You know, where his average lies. I mean, do you think he's going to be these 80s, or do you think? I mean, there is a case to be made that he was going to score 100 in the first game, and he is obviously coming back from injury, so he wouldn't be going as hard. I like his role. It is sort of a forward midfield, sort of Steve Johnson-y type of role. It's a matter of whether he can score that well against teams that are not... I mean, if he can only score 80 against Melbourne, but the other side of that is that he was coming back off the injury. So where do you think Lacroix's average settles at, Molly?
Yeah, I think the 90 towards 100 is where he can get to. I mean, he's done that... He's got close to that in the past, and I think he can get there again. It's going to depend what other players around him do as well. So, you know, he's about at where his average has been in the past. He just needs to kick it on a little bit, and hopefully, if you're thinking of getting him when they have the better players back, that will help him out. But you know, he's a risky one, you know, having already missed a game through injury, coming back from injury itself. So his higher price and I couldn't see him averaging 100. So I think there'd be a fair amount of risk in picking him up.
Mm. All right. Andrew Embley. So he is out for 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks with a foot injury. I suppose you could call that luck, or you could call it, you know, that he was injury prone, or he was coming off an interrupted preseason. I suppose it probably is luck more than anything else, but of course you have to trade him out now, Molly, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you've taken the risk on him. He's broken even at least, and yeah, especially in Dream Team, it's probably time to get rid of him. The experiment's over. He was a mid-price player that didn't really kick on. So move him on and try and get on someone a bit better.
Well, he's someone who you could go up to mullet for, so that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
And finally, to round out the Eagles talk, Callum Sinclair, who is on the bubble this week with an average around about 60 in both competitions and a break-even of about minus 50 in both competitions. And, I mean, I could see as I think most coaches would have Dan Curry as their fourth ruck. So if you don't necessarily like the look of Majak Dore, who got named this week, then this is the week to get Sinclair in. If you just want someone, if you want everyone on your team to be making money, then if you don't like the look of Curry just sitting there stinking it up at R4, then Sinclair does look like the man to get in at least this week. But is his position in this team only being, you know, warmed? Is it a seat only being warmed for Nat Newey, who'll be back in 2 to 3 weeks from his groin injury?
He looked like he could play another role in the side, but you would think that the main role is in that ruck forward spot. So, you know, leaving him in would be somewhat risky in that sort of position, unless you thought there may be injuries in the future.
Mm. All right, we'll move on to the GWS game. They, of course, played the Saints. Now, Toby Green, his owners, I mean, we talk about the second-year Blues, the second-year, what's the word we use? The second-year, no, no, it's not curse.
The wall.
The wall, is it? Yes. Look, I mean, it's true, it's real, and Toby Green is I mean, you can say, well, it's just something that doesn't happen to every player. There are players who do kick on. Obviously, the higher draft picks do tend to kick on, like your Gibbs and Goddards and these players. I think even Lance Franklin had a second-year Blues, is what I'm thinking of. Second-year Blues, of course. So, yes, Toby Green has the second-year Blues, Molly. So I think that's... I mean, if you have him at the moment, I don't know why you necessarily hang on to him. He's... lost you over $50,000 in both competitions, and his break-even is over 130 in both competitions. He's averaging less than 60. Time to get him out, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would have thought so. You know, teams are starting to key in on him, making it hard for him. I think time to move him out. But, you know, he's a guy to keep an eye on and see if he can turn it around later in the season. There may be some value in keeping an eye on him in the later parts of the season.
And the two Lockies, we're going to have to talk about those two again, Molly. Of course, they let us down not only the... it was last week, really, they let us down. The previous week, if you'd started them, Whitfield was certainly came through with a big DT ton. But if you were starting them against St Kilda and hoping for good scores, well, you didn't get anything out of that at all. It wasn't even the good fourth quarter like they had in the first round of the season. So they have both been named, Whitfield and Plowman, on the extended interchange today. And I'm not sure that both of them are going to be playing this week, especially Plowman. It looks like at least... I think Plowman is tradable at this stage. I'd have a bit more faith in Whitfield, but again, you know, I could certainly see people, you know, getting him out for Crouch at this stage.
Yeah, I think that's... That's a fair call. I think Plowman is the one that would be more likely to move than Whitfield. I think Whitfield will be a bit up and down, but should come good. Whereas Plowman, he seems to be playing, you know, a roles and the likes. So it means his score isn't going to be up to scratch. And, you know, he's just trying to pull up his thing. He's already, you know, just made you some money and has a high break even already. So you don't want that from a high price rookie. And as you said, it's probably worth moving him to a Turlich who's almost guaranteed to make you a lot of money straight away. And in Dream Team, you can use that to get some of these back rookies moving, you know, into premium or near premiums.
I'm not sure that Crouch is necessary to get in, because of course you can have Mays coming down the stretch coming onto the bubble next week, and you're going to have next week, it looks like the Dogs are going to be playing their youngsters, so it'll be Jackson McRae the week after, and as well I think Horvat's playing this week as well, so he'll be on the bubble in a couple of weeks assuming he stays fit. So I think there's a fair few midfield rookies coming down the turnpike for Whitfield to be traded out for. I think the smart move is to wait for that DT ton from round two to rotate through at least one more time, even if he doesn't produce startable scores this week. So that'd be my advice. That's certainly what I'm doing. On the St Kilda side of that game, Molly, Dylan Robertson's turn it was to score a DT ton in that half back line of Sydney. I had Aaron Sipos in Supercoach, and of course he delivered a big fat. It wasn't a donut because I had Rowe on the bench, but certainly Sipos has been a big disappointment. And Nunes, of course, getting injured, that's put paid to his salary cap worth at least. And of course, Geary delivered a decent number in the end, but. Yeah, I don't want any part of any of those guys anymore, I don't think. It's just too much of a whack-a-mole situation. One of them is going to score big every week, but you don't know which one it is, and it's not going to be the same guy every week.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Robertson's probably got some value. He's had pretty good scores all the way through in Supercoach, with 118 last week and 90 the week before, off 76 the first week. So maybe still some value in Robertson. In Super Coach, but Dream Team has been a bit up and down. You know, he's got that 100 to roll through, but I think it's more of a case is if you had him, then you're doing well rather than looking to bring him in now.
All right, we will go on to the Geelong and Carlton game now. If you are, I think I had these two down for last week's show, if we were going to do it, and we might as well get back onto this subject. If you were going to choose one of the premium Geelong forwards, which one would it be? So I think the choices last week, I would have made you choose between Bartell and Chapman. Or actually, I might have done that after the first week, now that I think of it. But anyway, of course, we have to add Steve Johnson to that mix. Now, Steve Johnson is coming off a knee injury, and of course he did get a knock to that same knee on the weekend, which bled and didn't look good, and he hobbled all the way through it, and he still got a 92, I should say, Molly. Now, is this a good sign or a bad sign? I actually see it as a good sign that he looked so terrible and was hobbling about and looked like an old man, and he still scores 92. Is that actually a good sign or a bad sign?
I think it's a good sign, but a worrying sign that maybe there'll be another injury around the corner. So I like all three of these guys. I don't think you can go wrong with any of them. I don't think this is going to be a huge match-winning move to get one of these guys, but it's also not going to blow up in your face. You know what you're going to get from them. They might be able to average an extra 5 or 6 or 10 over their rolling average that you've got now. But these guys score fairly consistently, and they're gonna do the job for you, my opinion on them. So having one or two of these would not worry me at all.
Nope. Yeah, good call, I reckon. On the Carlton side, I think if you're going to get Mitch Robinson, now is the time, because of course he had that concussion sub game in the first game. So there's only one week where that rotates through his price, and that is this week. So he lost over 40 grand in both competitions. His break even is in the 90s in both competitions, and he could easily score that, I feel, this week against the Eagles. Looking at his draw coming up to the bye, so he's got the Eagles and the Crows in the next couple of weeks, which are probably a few Interesting. You'd probably go with someone like Hearn, I would think this week, and then the week after Riley. So he might be playing some defensive roles. Now that looking at that, I'm not sure this might be the actual week to bring him in. It might be the week after, which would be better. After that, though, the draw does open up with Melbourne, the Saints, Power, Lions, GWS, Essendon, and Hawthorn. So I think if you're going to get him in, maybe this week or next week, it's just a matter of whether how much time you think he's going to put into someone like Hearn or maybe even a Glass, because underrated, I think, Glass is a free-running player in that back line. So would you be waiting another week, or do you think Robinson's going to be able to beat that break even this week, Molly?
I think you can any of the next few weeks pick him up. He's got a break even that he's probably going to hit there and thereabouts. And so then the Adelaide game. But looking at previous history on his profile page on FanFooty, he scores about 18 points over his average against West Coast over the four games he's played against them. But Adelaide's been a team he hasn't scored well against without going back into why that is. You know, he's 24 under his average. But then he bounces up against Melbourne and averages 120 almost. So I think if you can't get him in this week, then perhaps after the Adelaide game, there may be a secondary opportunity to pull him in. If he just breaks even this week, he may take a hit against Adelaide and that'll set you up for a little bit cheaper to bring him in to play against Melbourne and then St Kilda, where he's also 11 above his average. So could be a couple of opportunities there still to get him in.
All right. And also at the Blues, Mark Murphy, he's in the gun this week in the media for, of course, his opponent, Taylor Hunt, kicking three goals on him. And people are talking about him not having a defensive side to his game, just like the previous Carlton captain, Chris Judd, and the criticism that now implies for, of course, Mick Malthouse. Apparently, there's been a lot of media talk this week about how it's going to take, you know, half the season for the Carlton team to click onto the Malthouse way of thinking, and I'm not sure, and there's been some speculation about whether they had the cattle to do that. All of this pressure is going to be weighing upon Mark Murphy this week. So I have him in both competitions because I thought he was underpriced because of his injuries last year. Do you think the Carlton captaincy, Molly, is going to weigh on him and affect his scoring this year? Or is he going to bounce back and be an offensive juggernaut like we have seen in previous years? Where do you think his game's going to go, offensive or defensive?
Well, I think he may feel the pressure to do a bit more defensively, but I think he's good enough to get over that. It may take him a few weeks to work it out, but he'll get there and move his scoring along to, you know, where it needs to be. So he's coming off about 100. So his prices have dropped over the last year by 10, and he's out about where he was last year. So it's a matter of can he bounce back to that 211 form and get to a point where he's someone who you should have.
All right. And on also to round out the Carlton talk, Sam Rowe has also got a bit of media speculation around him this week about whether he's the next great white hope. Of course, with Cruiser going down with that injury for, is it 4 to 6? Let me see. I'm looking at the, 4 to 6 with his, 3 to 4 actually, with his thumb. It was originally 4 to 6 and then they revised it down because of the, I believe the surgery went better than they expected. So it's only 3 to 4 now. Anyway, so for fantasy football purposes, for salary cap games, Sam Rowe is on... he's not on the bubble this week because... he's on the bubble this week. Yes, my apologies. Because, of course, he missed the first game. So is he necessary to get into your side? Because it is a situation where it's only Rowe and Hampson down there as key forward targets. They may rotate Henderson through there, I suppose. But the talk out of Carlton supporters, if not Carlton itself, is that Rowe seems to be being groomed to play the weight role. So they will target him more than they will Hampson. So do you think Hampson is actually the focal point of that attack now, or is it Rowe?
By the row, the weight roll, do you mean to be out every week injured?
Well,
sorry. No, I mean, he looks like he's going to do okay. And, I mean, being a tall, he's going to have his ups and downs. But having that ruck eligibility, you know, it could be a chance for you to put him away in the forward line for someone who isn't performing or isn't getting a game. So if you've got a McCaffrey or someone like that, and just open up a dual ruck eligibility there that may come in handy later on. And he's a rookie who's going to score okay for a while. So even if you only hold on to him for a few weeks, that may be enough. Hmm. So, you know, it may be enough to, you know, see Blitzkov's get to his top of his roller coaster and then get out of him and you know, if that's something that you think you can make some money at, and you know, bring in another forward, so that's an option with that dual eligibility. But yeah, I don't think he's a required player, but he could be a nice to have if you haven't got problems elsewhere.
All right. On the Gold Coast Brisbane game, the Q Clash, I think they haven't found a better name for that, have they? So they're still calling them Q Clash.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Hutchins is the player I want to speak about there. So he's on the bubble this week, and he is rookie priced. It was an interesting role that they forced him into the Lions, because I spent a bit of time trying to figure out who Hutchins was playing on, because half the time he seemed to be playing on McKeever and half it was on Rockliffe. And I think that's actually... that was actually what was engineered by Brisbane, because they were rotating McKeever and Rockliffe through the forward line, and McKeever seemed to be spending the time he wasn't in the forward line on the bench pretty much. He obviously can play as a defender, but he was playing forward that day. And Hutchins was, you know, showed obviously his versatility, that he can play on both tall and small and still score a decent fantasy score, 73 in Dream Team and 87 in that game. So he is on the bubble this week. So, I mean, you look at his numbers, and he's actually, I think he's scoring just about as good, if not better, than Turlick. Certainly in Supercoach, I think he's scoring better. So, I mean, all the hype is around Turlick, but is Hutchins going to be a better prospect in the end?
Well, that's a possibility, absolutely. So, you know, he's there as well as an option to pick up. So... you've got a couple of options there in the back line to which one of these guys you're going to pick up. So, you know, maybe there's some theory along the line of that he's playing with a, you know, and funny to say, but a slightly better team. So maybe you'll look to who they've got ahead, and, you know, he's got Port, Western Sydney, Fremantle and Melbourne. So...
and the perhaps, Dogs after that, that's right.
And there you go, the Dogs after that. So maybe there is some theory in getting him instead of a Turlich.
The only corollary to that, I suppose, is that, 32 of that 73 was taken up with 8 tackles in that game. So you don't normally get 8 tackles in a game, so I would that part of it would not be replicable. What's the word I'm looking for there, Molly?
Able to be replicated.
Yes, indeed. So, yes, I'm not sure that's going to happen every week. So 73 might be beyond him in terms of an ongoing average, but it's 50s and 60s. And, you know, it may not be all that different from Hutchins to Turlick, but I guess the issue there is job security. I mean, people are going to be coming in and out of that Melbourne side, and Turlick hasn't got the hype of even of a Devaney or even a Matt Jones, because people noticed Matt Jones in his second game. So I'm not sure people have necessarily noticed Turlick all that much. So when the revolving door policy does inevitably come in at Melbourne, then Turlick might be one of the ones who gets sacrificed as, you know, last in, first out. So Hutchins, I'm not sure, is going to be in that same realm, because, of course, they haven't got Maguire. So... and Maguire's out for a fair amount of time, as I recall. Matt Maguire, 2 to 4 weeks with his leg injury. So Hutchins has got at least that long, I think, wow. I'm thinking of Brisbane, aren't I? I'm talking wrong team. Gold Coast. Who is it out? Who's out of that team?
Bock,
so,
but, I mean, Bock,
I suppose,
forward,
yes.
I mean, yeah. the other thing in Turlich's positivity...
Seb Tape is so he's out for 1 to 2 weeks, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, Turlich as well, I mean, he's got the positive as well that, in my mind, where his DT to Supercoach score is, you know, a positive multiplier, whereas Turlich is not doing that as well. But in saying that, I don't think I'm pretty sure most of Melbourne players probably will be in that way, and it could be just a factor of the team rather than the individual player themselves.
It might actually be one of those ones where Turlich is the one you choose in Dream Team and Hutchins is the one you choose in Supercoach.
I would absolutely say that. Mm. Yeah, I definitely think you'd be more likely to go with Turlich than Hutchins in Supercoach.
All right. In the Brisbane side, Dane Zorko. Now, poor old Dane Zorko owners, talk about second-year blues. He has the second-year blues, and he has them bad, Molly. He got tagged out of that game by Wilkinson, of all people. I wouldn't have thought Wilkinson was a match-up for him, but Zorko just... I mean, is he injured? Is he carrying something? I'm not sure. He just hasn't looked interested. He's been running around, but he hasn't been... getting to the right positions as he did last year. Is it time to do a magic trick and make him disappear?
In Dream Team, it's definitely time. But Supercoach, maybe not. Maybe you can hold on to him a bit longer. He's down about the same in both, and it's got the same break even. So I think a lot of people have picked him on last year's form rather than this year's form, which is a big mistake. I guess he showed a little bit through the preseason. So that's definitely a worry. I often think with guys like Zorko and the likes where they're not picked up as young kids and suddenly they come on and everything's rosy, that they weren't picked up for a reason, and perhaps this is part of the reasoning that, you know, he can be worked out in the end. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see if he can turn it round again.
All right. We'll move on to the Richmond and Western Bulldogs game. Now, Dustin Martin, the knock on him from... fantasy coaches knew this about 2 years before the mainstream media. They've only just caught up with the fact that Dustin Martin only plays half a game. I mean, even such esteemed analysts as Caroline Wilson are even saying that now. The message has got through that Martin is a first-half player. So... it was a pleasant surprise to see him play four quarters, although the corollary to that, Molly, was that he only played 75% time on ground, which is very low for a player who plays all game, especially in the midfield, so even these days. So have they figured out the key to unlocking a four-quarter performance by Dustin Martin by putting him on the bench, you know, a lot more than the regular player? Because he did seem to run out that game, and, I mean, again, it was only the Bulldogs. And, I mean, if you think that the Carlton midfield don't run both ways, I don't think the Bulldogs' defensive efforts in midfield were all that good at all in that game. So is this the turning point for Martin, or is he going to revert back to form the next week when they play a better opponent in Collingwood?
Yeah, I mean, that's a distinct possibility, whether he's clicked on or not. So I think he's absolutely worth holding on to if you've got him. I wouldn't be looking to pick him up myself if I didn't have him already. I wouldn't be that confident, especially with this score to roll through, unless you're going to pick him up for a short stint in DT or something like that. So, you know, I wonder whether he's someone that if you get to the point where everything's looking rosy in your side, you could take a profit on him once this 144 rolls through. But, you know, I think the jury's out on whether that's a good move, and the other thing is, by the time he rolls through that, it's probably going to be, you know, rookie moving season, so harvesting the cash cow, so that might not be an option for you.
All right. Also at Richmond, Ricky Pettered is on the bubble this week because, of course, he missed the first game, 59-65 in that game, so his better performances were in the first game against St Kilda. The Richmond draw gets a bit tougher from here. So the Pies, the Dockers, the Cats, the Power, the Demons.
Well, the Powers are undefeated.
Essendon and West Coast. So that's probably a middling draw, I would have thought. But in terms of players that he has to, small defenders that he has to take notice of, well, I mean... I'm not sure whether that's really the thing you should judge Pettit on about his opposition. It's a matter of whether how he is playing and whether the structure is built there to feed his strengths. And it has been noticeable that since Pettit has come back into the team, Newman has abandoned that plan of playing wing and he's playing in defence again. So I think the longer that goes. That Newman is going to play defence, that more that frees up Pettit. So it seems like they've abandoned the thought of Newman delivering inside 50 because they seem to have got a lot of that out of their three-star midfielders, obviously, in Jaledio, Cochin, and now Martin, of course. So the rise of Martin means that Newman goes back into defence and then Pettit, you know, provides run off the half-back line. So there is certainly, in terms of structure, there is an argument there that Pettit is part of that best 22 and they've got a spot for him, which is a lucrative fantasy position. So it's just a matter of whether you feel like he is going to stay part of that best 22 for the foreseeable future. So what do you reckon, Molly?
Well, I mean, he's got, what's the guy's name?
Vlastuin. Yeah.
Vlastuin, that's him, breathing down his neck too. You know, they seem quite keen to give him a run at some point into the future. So I think there's a fair argument to say that he's, you know, one or two bad games away from losing his spot. He's a mid-price, break-evens, catching up. It's not negative like you'd like it to bring him in. He's not scoring hugely. So, you know, there's a lot to be worried about his job security and his scoring. So hang on to him if you've got him, but I wouldn't be looking at him as a good option.
I mean, it's interesting because if Karnezis survives the cut this week, Karnezis has got a lot larger break even, but is he going to score more than Pettit, assuming that neither of them get vests? Who's going to score more, Pettit or Karnezis, if you're looking to get someone of that price in at this stage? I mean, it's a bit of a conundrum.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, I could see Pettit being a lot more stable, but I think Karnezis has got a higher ceiling.
Yep. Good point. All right. On the Bulldogs side of that game, now, I mean, I didn't really want to speak of any of the Bulldogs who played last week, but... Because, I mean, obviously everyone's got goods and everyone played him and everyone enjoyed that middling score in Dream Team, but good score in Supercoach. But obviously there was a bunch of injuries this week, Murphy, Higgins, Dixon, all out. So they're bringing in the youth. So it's Jackson McRae and Nathan Horvat. I think it's Horvat, even though it's spelt Hrovat. You're the expert on Eastern European names, Molly. You can tell me, how is that actually pronounced?
Yeah, I think it's Horvat.
Horvat, okay, good. Right, so Jackson McRae and Nathan Horvat, Jackson, of course, being a man with no first names. I mean, obviously it's too early to bring them in right now, or is it? I mean, can you see these players, you know, it does look like the Bulldogs are playing the kids. So, yeah. I mean, if you're getting the likes of Plowman... or Tumpas out this week, because obviously especially Tumpas is going to be losing money. I think he's already lost money as it is. Is it too early to get on McRae and Horvat, or is it? I mean, do you have faith in these guys that they're going to be jumping out of the blocks like some Bulldogs have in recent years?
No, I don't think it's a good move to pick him up, any of them this early. I think there's better options around. You know, we've talked about backs who are a better option. Crouch is a obvious one in the midfield. And, you know, I think we've even discussed some mid-price players there as well. So, no, I don't like to take a rookie sight unseen. So I would be waiting a week or two to see how these guys perform and taking that risk that, you know, maybe they will pop out a big one to start off with.
Mm. All right, time for Pie Talk, and I can break some... I have some breaking news here, Molly. Eddie McGuire has given me the scoop. He is petitioning the AFL. He's going to organise, apparently, that The player Ryan Schoenmakers is going to be placed on a rotating club policy. So the idea is that every team that plays Collingwood is going to have Ryan Schoenmaker on their list every week, and he gets to play on Travis Cloak. And this is Eddie's idea for Collingwood to win the flag every single year, and Cloak to win the Coleman, and possibly kick 150 plus goals every week. So nevertheless, on a serious. What's that?
Are you quite done?
No. Well, yeah, okay. So, on a relatively serious note, I know we talked a lot, way too much about Travis Cloak. Everyone talked way too much about Travis Cloak last year, but he has been on the. I think he's got a permanent footy show gig. Is that what the
a 5-year deal? 5-year is the rumor. Deal.
Yes. Nevertheless, yeah, we do need to talk about him from a fantasy perspective, because he's in my WAGS team, and he's actually doing quite well, because, of course, that 120-plus in both competitions against the hapless, hopeless Ryan Schoenmaker on the weekend has meant that his average across the first three games is in double figures above what he's cost you, and he's earned over 20 grand in both competitions, break even of 50, so... he's going to be earning money for the next 2 weeks. Is now the time to get him? Because I mean, is he actually underpriced because of all that rubbish he went through last year, which has opened up, and now he's going to be playing the footy that we know he's capable of? Or I mean, it does seem like with Hudson in that side, that means Lynch goes back to the role which is more suited to him and suited to Cloak. So I suppose if you're taking a bet on Travis, you're also taking a bet on Hudson. Do you think that structure is going to hold up across a large number of games?
Yeah, no, I think it is. He's a quality player, and he had a down game against Carlton. But, you know, his other two games have been pretty good. I think there's a lot to like about him, and with the new rules and the likes, the ball flowing a bit quicker, I think he'll be fine. And yeah, it's not a bad week to pick him up at.
Mm. He was playing in that Carlton game against a fullback called Michael Jamieson. I'm not sure who he was playing. Well, no, it was Sean Schoenmakers he was playing.
Well, I didn't see Thompson do too much against him in the first game, though.
Well, that's true.
Meant to be a good backman. So.
That is true.
Cloak's a quality player. He gives a lot of guys trouble.
When is Brian Lake coming back, by the way? Didn't he play in the VFL?
Well, I think he was hurt this week, not injury-wise, but hurt by the injury to Pavlich. There just wasn't a real matchup for him this week. So he's going to have another run around for Box Hill.
All right, you're sounding like a robot at the moment, Molly. Hopefully that Skype connection is going to improve. But that's right. Well, we'll move on to Hawk Talk. Hopefully that'll improve things. Because,
yes, it always does.
Indeed. So we actually need to talk about Luke Hodge from a fantasy perspective, because, of course, he is on the bubble this week. And obviously the first week against the Eagles was pretty damn good, and with 99 and 103. And this week, of course, went even greater with 135 and 123. This week, of course, he did kick three goals amongst that. Two goals, I should say, amongst that. 31 disposals and six tackles and four marks. And he played one of the best games he's played for many years. But he is very injury-prone, Molly. And despite the fact that he's, high up in the averages. And, of course, he is only a centre. If he was a back... Well, I think we'd all be all over him. But as a centre, we have higher standards for our centres. So is he a viable salary cap prospect, given all the knocks against him?
I think there's some merit to it. If you haven't got troubles and you've got the cash to bring him in, if you've picked up cash the first week, maybe getting to Lewenberger from one of your rucks, then... if you've got that cash to bring him in, you could ride him and hopefully 100 average for the next few weeks until, some of your rookies mature and can either push him further and further down that midfield bench or upgrade him to someone better. So, I think there's some merit in looking to see if he fits your side and can come in. I wouldn't be expecting 135 every week, but you know, 80 to 100 is definitely in his ballpark. He's playing a bit off the back flank, a bit up forward, a bit in the midfield. So, you know, he's going to get his opportunities in most weeks.
So if you're an opposition analyst looking at the Hawthorn team right now, and who is it we're playing this week? Fremantle. So if you're Ross Lyon and you have talent at your disposal in terms of taggers, you have Ryan Crowley at your disposal and you have Matt DeBoer. Who, if anyone, do you send to Luke Hodge? I would have thought DeBoer would have been an obvious matchup for Hodge. Because, I mean, at this point, Hodge should be... I mean, he might have six Brownlow votes from two games. He is very much taggable. I would have thought DeBoer would have sat on him this week, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I would have thought so, or Crowley. I think Crowley's got the size to go with him as well. So, you know, one of those two, depending on where he plays, could be guys to pick up on him this week.
So what does that mean for the rest of the Hawthorn team? So who escapes the tag? If the, I mean, if you're an opposition analyst, who are the two tags you send? I mean, is it Hodge and Mitchell, or is it Hodge and Rioli, or Rioli and Mitchell, or someone else? Who do you send the taggers to?
Well, I think Tilt Reyes has got it. You really need to tag Birchall. I mean, don't tell anyone, but. You know, he's got to be made more accountable than he is. I can't believe he's only in 12% of sides. He is a gun, and he's a guy you really need to tag out of it because he's damaging off the halfback, and he's been kicking goals this year, which is, you know, to a degree something new. So I think he's one to tag, and then one of either Hodge or Mitchell is the normal.
Now, who were actually the halfback flanks in that game? Because obviously you've got a Hodge who sometimes plays halfback, but you've got Sam Mitchell who played halfback flank in the first game, and then you've got Birchall, and then of course you've got Guerra, probably more of a back pocket type role. Is it a rotation? How does it actually work with the halfback flanks? Who actually does play backline?
I think Burgoyne was down there some of the time. Jiraiya played some time down there. So he looked okay when he didn't actually have the ball. He had a bit of trouble picking it up at times. But, you know, he looked quite composed when he got it into his hands. So I think those guys were it. And you know, when Lake comes in against bigger opponents, he's, you know, it's almost going to be, you know, one of Stratton or Gibson almost running off those positions. So both those guys use the ball okay and should be good value as well.
That's interesting. So Lake might even... No, Lake wasn't named this week. So, well, I suppose we'll talk about Gerard next week when he's on the bubble. That'll be a discussion for next week. So, yeah, so just to round that out, just to underline that point. So you would expect DeBoer to go to Birchall and Crowley to go to Hodge, and that means Mitchell... stays free?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Maybe Crowley will go to Mitchell because he has tagged him out of it before.
Now, I haven't got him on the running sheet. That's why. Because, yes, I was going to mention Liam Shields, but now that I look at it, he's actually too overpriced for us to talk about. Sort of, I suppose. Well, okay, well, now let's talk about Liam Shields. So we know he has form in... scoring DT tons because he averaged 100 in 2011 from a full 22 games, much less last year. So his average dropped below 80 in both competitions. Now he scored a 100 this week and also was one of the best on ground, even though he only scored 70 in that game against the Eagles because he hurt Gaff the other way. So he has shown, especially in that Collingwood game, because he did spend a fair bit of time on a Swan, that he can tag and also score in Dream Team, Molly. So it does look like he's now a fully fledged tagger. He's not just being groomed anymore. He is a fully fledged tagger. So can he actually score like Kane Corns? I mean, it's a very rare tagger who can score like Kane Corns. So is Liam Shields actually in that mould?
Well, I don't know whether he's got that same, you know, DT game as a Kane Corns. But, you know, he, as you say, he has averaged 100 before and... last year he had a couple of injuries going into the season, never really got going. And this year he had one going into the preseason, didn't play as much. So he's getting back to his form now. And so there is a chance that you could make some hay on him now, you know, with his price being slightly down on what it should be. If he's going to average 100, but you know he's not going to be a premium. It would be a few week towards the bye sort of get a cheapie and hope he gets up to that 100 point. So it's only, you know, a jump from 100 to 110. You're trying to take your player rather than you know, from a rookie to a premium type jump.
All right, tempting fate by adding players into the running sheet. I apologise for that, Molly, given the technical problems we've had this week. But anyway, let us get on to the last game of the round, which, of course, was the showdown. I read the round review on dtinsider.com and written by a friend of ours. And basically, his take on Justin Westhoff was that he was a bronze god. He's basically a god. He walked among men, but he is a living god. He looks like a bum off the street, but I mean, from fantasy point
of
view,
Chad was it?
Well, no, it might as well have been. But yes, he has delivered two 140 plus scores in the last 2 weeks. Now, you would have expected, I suppose, well, perhaps not expected it, but it would have been nice against GWS. But to do that again, to back that up in the hottest game of, and is in the most dynamic game of the year, 140 in Dream Team and 150 in Supercoach. Now, his role, I mean, he just ran Otten all about the park, and it was just, I mean, Brenton Sanderson got out-coached, I think, on the day by Ken Hinckley, because Westhoff just got off the chain, especially in the first half, and in the second half, I should say. And, yeah, Adelaide just didn't know how to handle him. And he is, as I keep on saying, Westhoff is a talisman, a bellwether for the power in showdowns. If he goes well, then the team goes well, and that was certainly the case in this game. So, I mean, I would have actually, if I was asked last week, I would have advised against getting Westhoff. So perhaps I'm not the person to answer this question, but I'll ask you it, Molly. I mean, is it too late to get on the Hoff bandwagon? Or, I mean, he's still got to break even well into the minuses. You're paying 460 in 463 in Dream Team. Well, okay, well, let's talk in terms of implied average. You're paying for an average of 91 in Dream Team and 98 in Supercoach. Is that just paying too much? Is he going to keep up anywhere near that those sort of scores, or has he got a fall coming? Given that he's got Gold Coast this week, I mean, come on.
Yeah. So I've liked Matt Warnock's play, but you would have to say that even if Warnock plays well, he's going to have a chance to score well against Gold Coast. So.
Now, I wouldn't think it'd be Warnock. I would have thought it'd be Rory Thompson. Wouldn't it be Rory Thompson?
It could be Thompson, and he's been okay as well. So, you know, but still there's going to be a lot of opportunities, you'd think, although I give Gold Coast a slight chance to you know, play well with Port Adelaide up there in the Gold Coast, I think it is. So, you know, I think he can play well, but you are a little bit nervous that this can't last, that it's a purple patch. So you have to, I mean, when you're considering it, you know, it's going to be a risk, but there is a good return there if he can continue to average 100 even, you know, you're going to do well out of it. So I wouldn't be going in hoping for, you know, him to average 120, I'd be going in hoping he can average 100, which is possible. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, and we've always thought he's had a lot of talent, but he went missing. So whether it's just Ken Hinckley has, you know, found the magic switch to turn him on for the whole games, that could be the possibility. So, you know, it's a chance for you to pick him up and hope for the best.
You've made me look at the Port Adelaide side and trying to work out the matchup. So I think it's going to be Warnock on Schultz and Thompson on Westhoff, and then it'll be Jack Hutchins on Angus Monfries, I would have thought. And then you obviously have so that'll be the three tools on the three tools. Thompson got smashed by Brown last week, so he's beatable, even though he's had a good start to the season and everyone is saying he's a good prospect. So that's an interesting matchup. But I do feel that Westhoff is due for a downer, but it may not come this week. So if you're riding that Hoff train, then this is probably another week to do it.
I was listening to Warnie on SEN, and apparently he's the number five on the Kelvin captains this week. After
what
people said last week to get on him, and apparently Kelvin poo-pooed that, and then he knock off about 140, 150. Yes. So it was definitely a Kelvin's captain or a captain possibility. So.
All right. Also in the Port Adelaide side, Oliver Wines. Now, the problem was, I thought he was, because of course he was named on an extended interchange bench, and I thought he might have, he was named on the bench, the four-man interchange bench, and I thought he was going to be a sub-risk. And of course, I benched him. Stupid me. Of course, that was always going to happen. This is what I sort of hate about Dream Team Molly, is that when you make a mistake, when you play someone like a Whitfield over a Wines, you might expect if you make the wrong decision to make it wrong to lose maybe 30 or 40 points. Not 90 points! Come on, that's just not fair. Yeah. But anyway, so I lost 90 points on that one, as I suppose many other people would have. But Oliver Wines, an every week starter, I would have thought from here, surely.
At the moment, absolutely. He's one of those guys where you sneakily put him in and hope that maybe you can sneak him a long way into the season as M8. Even as you do your upgrades, that he may be M8 or M9 now. So I guess I haven't really thought through whether we're going to have. You're going to have eight of the premium midfields by the end of the year. I'm not sure your thoughts on that, or whether we are going to have some lower premiums in that M8 spot. But at the moment, he's someone who you're probably hoping to nurse through most of the season and be a guy who will put up good performances for you.
Hmm. Now, I am in the position where I have to start both Jake Need and Sam Dwyer, but a lot of people would be in the position where they have to start one of them, and you probably have blokes like McCaffer on the bench as well, and maybe a Karnesis you might still have there, or a Sam Rowe. Is Jake Need more startable than all those options, Molly, or is it still a horse of course? I mean, obviously you're starting him this week against the Gold Coast, but is he an every week starter at this point?
Is that, sorry, Need?
Need, yes.
No.
No?
No. You're hoping that he does okay as an emergency. But, I mean, personally myself, I've tried to be more premium and mid prices in my forward line. So, he could start, but you're hoping to have a better player than that.
Mm. Now, it was a fairly red-hot game, that one, so it wasn't surprising that some rookies didn't score that well, although it was a bit surprising that neither Heath nor Stevenson nor Pittard reached 50 in that game, and certainly Pittard was tagged right out of it by Jared Petrenko. It had a slow start to the season, I thought, but Petrenko really shut Pittard down, especially in the first half. Stevenson managed to rescue a 40 out of it in Dream Team and 49 in Supercoach, but... yeah, Pittard, that is not really a startable score. So, I mean, how startable are those guys? I mean, you're thinking, this is obviously, we're just coming out of round three now, which is obviously the most important week for price movements, because this is the first week where the price has three rotations in the price for the purposes of price movement. So, is it a matter of Pittard and Stevenson, and if you've got Heath, then Heath, that are the players you first want to get out of your side maybe after round five or six? Is that what you have to plan for at this stage?
Yeah, I think the back line's the first place we're going to be looking for upgrades to get one or two of these guys out and leave you with maybe Goods as defensive six. And then, you know, one or two of them on the bench to cover you. But, yeah, I would like to start to see what happens with these Port backmen and try and move them to more premium players.
All right. And on the Adelaide side, to round out the round review, Brad Crouch. Now, I think I've made my position on Brad Crouch known, that I think that you can afford to wait on him because you have got all these other players coming down the line, including, as I said, Mays from Brisbane, who we didn't talk about this week because he's not on the bubble, but he will be next week. And, of course, as I said, you've got those two dogs, Horvat and McRae, coming the week after. So is Brad Crouch leaveable?
I think he is, if you've got other concerns. But I like him myself. I'm picking him up. I like the fact that he's probably should have been in the top picks and instead got the bottom price. So he's someone who, you know, should make you a lot of money in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
And I should have mentioned Luke Brown in that discussion before, of course, also in conjunction with the Port back. So he's another one who is delivering some poor scores. I mean, obviously 70s last week and less than 20 this week. So that was very disappointing. But he should also be in that discussion. Now, before the internet intervenes again, we should really say farewell, Molly, just to round out the show for this week. And as I said, so I am still looking for another permanent host for the selection committee because Dan Fisher has got work commitments and can't make it every week. But I'm sure something will crop up, and we will continue on the selection committee podcast, which of course we had Footy Lover 18 on earlier today for an internet shortened show, sadly. But anyway, that's the joys of living in a third world country, Molly. This is what
yes. Vote for the NBN, not the fraud ban.
Indeed. On that note, we shall say goodbye and see you guys next week on the Coach's Box.
Okay, bye everyone.